Biology. So take it away, guys.
Well, I'm Richard Dick, Ohio State University, and I want to say it's a really honor and humbling at the same time to be invited for this session, and I appreciate the invitation to do so. And it was somewhat difficult to think about you know, exactly what we should talk about. So I thought I'd just say a little bit of how I got into soil science and how, what my background or how I came into the society, I should say, and then a few of the highlights in terms of soil biology and biochemistry, a little bit more of a historical perspective, and Anne Marie will take over and give her perspective and perhaps some of the futuring that we see in terms of soil microbiology and biochemistry. So, Why did I join SSSA? Well, as a graduate student here, having done 101 or 1,001 samples here in Tabatabai's lab, the key for me, having grown up in a small town in southern Minnesota, going to high school and maybe knowing what the word soil, there was such a word as soil, and maybe doing some petri dishes, growing some organisms in a petri dish in a biology class, you know, soil microbiology, soils was a completely foreign thing to me. But ultimately, I went to the University of Minnesota and then in plant science, and sort of serendipitously, I got offered an assistantship with Ed Dunnigan at Louisiana State University, who was the soil microbiologist at that time, and he had a lab right next to Bill Will and Patrick, and worked in that lab with Kay already, actually, who was a graduate student at the time. So, any rate, when I got there, this sort of opened up a whole new world of soil science that even though I had an undergraduate course in soils, it wasn't until I got to graduate school. And really, in terms of joining the society, it was my major professors who got me into the society. Both of them were very encouraging, and I think it's obvious for all of us, probably that is one of the key things as we think about membership. If your major professor isn't getting you into this society, it's likely you're probably going to go someplace else. So those are two people that were very influential in my early years. And I remember going to my first soils meeting, which actually was in Texas, in Houston. And probably the main thing I remember is sleeping on the floor in the hotel room because we piled in there probably somewhat illegally as far as the hotel management goes, but didn't have much money in those days, and so that was the main thing I remember from that first meeting. And I just wanted to reflect a little bit. I went sort of dug in the society and tried to get some background information as sort of where we were, where we are today, and I couldn't get numbers from the past, but going back to my first meeting, honestly, I probably couldn't remember having seen any women at that meeting. I'm sure there were some, but I think, at least in my experience, we have become much more diverse, and I just pulled out the numbers from our division in S3, and roughly 26% of our members are now women, and I know in my lab, I think I'm roughly at about 50% over the years in terms of graduate students, so I think that is definitely one thing that I've seen sort of change in the diversity in terms of the society. And so just to quickly, on a historical perspective, we do, and in case you didn't know, we do have one Nobel Prize winner in soil science who is Selzman Waksman, who was a very prominent, trained as a microbiologist, but did a lot of work on soils, soil organic matter, and ultimately discovered streptomycin for which he got the prize. And I'm not going to go through all these folks, and I'm put a disclaimer here. There's many. This list could be much longer of some of the prominent people that have been in the area of soil biology and biochemistry. I just put some of these up here because of the awards that they've won, that people have recognized from people outside of soils or organizations outside of soils. So Jack Bremner at Iowa State got the Humboldt Award. That was a $100,000 award. Schnitzer and Stevens shared the Wolf Award, which was a $100,000 award. And you can see some of the other folks here. Mary Firestone, I think I would particularly credit her in terms of the whole area of microbial ecology. And more recently, also currently, Jim Teagy, all the work that he's doing in metagenomics. So we've had this impact that have been recognized by other folks way in the earlier years. And just to quickly shift then to sort of what has happened, and this is where the back to the future comes, I think, in terms of microbiology. Waksman and these folks They were doing culturing, and we've been culturing microorganisms for 100 years now. And we've been looking at them under the microscope for that amount of time as well. And at the same time, right now, we've moved into this era of genomics and molecular approaches. And I guess the quick message in terms of soil microbiology is that we have all of these really modern, new, very cool molecular approaches, but at the same time, we're still very much have to be looking at the traditional methods to ground truth, if you will. We still need to have organisms that we can grow in a petri dish, look at them, characterize them for various properties, and make sure that our molecular work is really in line with what's actually out there. So, and the same thing for microscopy. We have some very advanced ways of looking at things at very micro scales with electron scanning microscopes and so forth. But at the same time, we still have these traditional methods that activity measurements and so forth that are still very important. I'm not going to go through this, I think, for the sake of time, except to say that I think some of the, in terms of the soil organic matter question, Salzman-Waksman had this theory, for example, in organic matter formation, which is said that lignin is largely what soil organic matter is composed of in terms of its recalcitrant. And really, later folks such as Stevenson and Schnitzer really brought us into the modern era in terms of what soil organic matter is all about. And so I think that we've moved through the era of having new techniques and really into this omics area, as I mentioned before, is where we're headed, but we still need these approaches from the past that are still very important in microbiology. And then lastly, for my part of the talk, I just wanted to throw this slide up that Anne-Marie put together, which is just showing that our soils journals are, the impact factor is increasing. And so I think as we look to the future, soils, and I'm biased towards microbiology, but I think right in the middle of all of our environmental issues, global climate change, feeding the world in terms of agricultural production, soils is right in the middle of that. So I think as a society, we have a great future ahead of us that we need to really capitalize on these opportunities, because other people in engineering, other aspects of microbiology are really doing a lot of soils work, but they don't necessarily have the holistic view that we have, I think, in terms of what we present as soil scientists and as our society. So I think with that, I'll stop at this point and turn it over to Anne-Marie.
So now into the future with the grand challenges of the Soil Science Society of America. So recently, although issues that are soils issues and have always been soils issues are current and important, there's more interest in soils from other scientists, and within our community there's a drive to move towards integrating different across different sciences. And so the students have this interest, the public, and our stakeholders. So the society put together these grand challenges to address that. And I think really we have everything in place to be extremely successful except for retention of our membership. So we need to increase early career faculty and professionals and grad students. So rather than talk about things in the abstract, I thought I'd try to apply these challenges to my own early career program, both in research and teaching. So my area of expertise integrates three of the areas that the grand challenges have outlined as important. And so those are ecosystem services at the top end, soil processes at the bottom, and connecting those two plant-soil microbial interactions. And so like Dick said, really the microbe and the plant connect to the system and really make us more holistic than some other disciplines. And so as far as cross-teaching and interdisciplinary teaching, I'm involved in several programs at Washington State that foster this through an IGART grant. And in addition to that, because the areas of practice that I study are automatically interdisciplinary due to the requirements of the research, I study microbial and soil processes that regulate global climate change and nutrient cycling in organic and sustainable agriculture systems. I felt my program really just almost instantaneously hit those areas of the challenge. and I didn't know about them until last year. So there was no intentional purpose to do that. And I think many of you, the people in the room have programs that would fall into that category. So before I go into my own program, I want to step back into the past briefly. So this is a soil taxonomy trip that I took as an undergrad student at Virginia Tech. And one thing that I've noticed is that since the 1990s, which for me is quite a ways back, that there's been dwindling numbers of students, and the core curricula, because of that, has become more limited. And at Washington State, we've really been fighting to get more students in, and so cross-disciplinary training is a way to do that. So even if you don't have a soils program per se, if you have the core courses that support the ARCPAC certification, that's what's really important, and so that's what we've been pushing for. So, and of course, having the opportunity to design a brand new class that's never been taught before, cross-disciplinary, is exciting too, and I think a lot of people probably in this room have started to do some of that too and are interested. So at Washington State, we have a number of programs that foster multidisciplinary graduate research mostly. I want to talk about one. It's an IGART, and we have more than one IGART. It's the INSPIRE program, and the drive behind this program is to address nitrogen cycling questions. And unlike some other programs, it also requires that the students understand something about policy. So they do an internship that's a policy-based internship. And so for the faculty who are cross-training them, we have to also work together. I mean, we want to work together. And so we have our own center. It's the Center for Environmental Research, Education, and Outreach. And this umbrella institute is really great because it facilitates this the ability for us to write grants together and to train students. And so the only requirement is that you address an environmental issue. And we also have economists and sociologists that participate. So where did the seeds for all of these new concepts, the challenges, come from? Partly from our mentors. They planted the seeds, and we tended them, and we're planting our own seeds now. So I'd like to talk a little bit about the two people that educated me during my PhD program at Michigan State. So Elder Paul and Dick Harwood were my co-advisors, and we'll start with Elder. So Elder is a classically trained soil microbiologist and agronomist, but he was on the committee of, and he's still actually on many committees, and you can see him at the Clark Lectureship today, in biology, microbiology, and crop and soils. And so he loved to instigate cross-disciplinary research, and I say instigate because he was always kind of pushing you forward to do more when you thought you got to the max. But anyway, so he really pushed this concept of the ecosystems approach, and initially many people in agronomy and soils didn't like the idea of being called ecologists because they felt like it was too removed from production agriculture, and the ecologist felt like an agronomic system is a little bit, you know, managed, too much of a managed system to really be a natural system. So is it really an ecosystem? Are they really ecologists? Well, so Elder proudly wore the badge of ecologist, and he's receiving this award from the Soil Ecology Society, and his wife Phyllis is next to him here. So that was a few years back. So Dick Harwood is also a systems ecologist, but he would argue that even the ecologists aren't very good ecologists relative to farmers. And so he was saying, you know, if you really want to look at innovative systems research, you have to go onto the farm and talk to the growers. And he felt like the rest of us should be, or scientists should be, let into the field kicking and screaming. So his background is a bit different. He started out building research centers in Southeast Asia, and he looked at a lot of indigenous agricultural practices. And what he noticed is, even over cropping systems in different cultures, there were certain practices that were the same. And he felt like there was a good reason for that, because these processes worked, and that these people were looking at the whole system. And so he didn't have the opportunity at that point to really test a lot of his theories and hypotheses, but obviously, you know, those things were incubating. So when he came back to the United States, he was recruited by the Rodale Institute, and he got to set up a set of side-by-side conventional and organic trials, and he tested some of his theories, and his hypotheses held up. And so after his stint at Rodale, He moved to, Elder recruited him, actually, and he moved into Michigan State and became the MOT Chair of Sustainable Agriculture. And so this is our working group from that time period. And along with working across different sciences, he also worked with economists and sociologists. So when I sent him the slide set and told him that he was going to be in it, he responded to me almost immediately in real time and said, great, thanks, good slide set. But after he had a little bit of time to look at what I put into the slide set, he said, well, you know, since I was your PhD advisor, you know, I have to at least ask you a question. So when you present your research, are you going to present it from the top down or the top up? Meaning, am I going to talk about focusing on the ecosystem and then moving down into the microbiology? Or am I going to start with the microbiology and go up to the ecosystem's level? And I said, well, both, because both are relevant depending on what you're discussing. And he said, great, then, you know, you're successful. Graduate of my program, because you know, that's what I always emphasize, that you need to look at things at different angles. And Elder as well believed in that approach. So most good researchers are able to go up and down the scale. And I think traditionally, PhDs have been very deep and not very broad. I mean, it's a danger to be too broad and, you know, a centimeter deep, but ideally we can go in both directions, and I think that's what the cross and interdisciplinary research is really about. So, you know, you would think, wow, this is a really exciting time. You know, I had a great PhD program, lots of good people, big ecosystems project, lots of data, lots of data. So when you have these big metadata sets, or you're looking at a lot of bioinformatics if you're doing genomics research, you really need the computational tools. And so that's one of the things that was talked about in the grand challenges, is can we answer some of the old questions using the new tools, and can we answer new questions based on the fact that we have access to these new tools? So if you're looking at ecosystems, you really need to be able to go through and collect a data set, but physically you can only collect so much data. So if you have the computational skills, you can model. And so that's where the Ritchie group comes in. It's the Nolan chair. And they model the plant-soil-water interactions. And so it was very helpful to be able to take a small set of data and see where we could go with that. And so even today now, I'm doing a little bit of modeling with CropSyst at Washington State with Claudio Stockel's group. But mainly I use the computational methods to look at the genomics, and I think that's a really big area, not just for microbiology, but for crops. You can sequence whole genomes of plants. So that's what I do in the context of the climate change. I look at organisms that are cycling nitrogen and carbon. So anyway, the future looks bright, right? Like the song, Gotta Wear Sunglasses. So we're set up for success, $3 billion a year, in research throughout the world, where our graduate students are well sought after. So what can we do really to improve? Well, I mean, I think the biggest gap is we need to advertise, educate, and legislate. So advertising, letting the public know what we're doing, using the DIG exhibit as an example, getting integrated into K-12 education, this is all part of the challenges, sustaining our undergrad programs, and then nationally having a standard as a professional society that is a legal standard. So we agree together what we are as soil scientists, but we need that to be legislated to put it into practice. So again, we have sort of a soil science renaissance going on, and I think we can continue if we seed for the future our research and ensure our growth. And so I hope to be here for the 100th anniversary of the Soil Science Society, and I want to leave you with our seed corn, the graduate students of Washington State University on their grad student field trip last year with me. So thank you, and it was a pleasure to see you.